This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Oh, oh, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh. Many's the time I've been two times, many's the time I've been stung. Many a honey took all of my money, but that was when I was much younger. Made up my mind to be careful, made up my mind to beware. I was all right until Saturday night. I met a gal with the goldenest hair. Oh, oh, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh. I thought I wouldn't get caught again. Never in 100, never in 1,000, never in 1,000,000 years.
Oh yeah, a little bit of Jimmy Rogers for you this morning. Get you going. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Monday morning, October 21st. We will be talking with the head of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll be doing that just at the bottom of the hour, 10:30. His name is Kent Lastman. We're going to talk about the Democrats' vaunted Green New Deal. You know, you hear about it, but you don't get into the weeds on it, do you? So we're going to talk with Kent about what it would really do, what it would really cost, and whether or not we can even pay for it. So stay tuned. And speaking about how to pay for it, Elizabeth Warren now says that she will explain how she'll pay for her Medicare for All plan. You know how she's been ducking on those presidential debates? Even her own colleagues on the dais asking her to explain how she would pay for it. Well, she says she will, finally, in the next couple of weeks. So we'll talk about that. Also, where is that Pfizer report? You know, the one that is being conducted? There's about two or three different reports going on, and we've been hearing about their coming out telling us the real dope on the investigation into President Trump's campaign, the illegal search warrant, et cetera. We're going to talk about where that is as well. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, we have a good one. This, for you old-timers in particular, the top 10 oldest surviving Academy Award nominees, the major ones. We're not going to talk about, you know, an Oscar for turning in a light bulb in the back room during a movie. But the big ones. Who are the top 10 oldest surviving nominees? So stay tuned for that. By the way, Freedom Works, sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop for the very best haircut in Tampa Bay. I'm going to tell you where it is. You got to go to Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That is on Overcash Drive. It is just north of Route 580 Main Street. Andrew's Master Barbershop. You will get not only a great haircut, and I mean a great one, because these guys and ladies have been doing hair for so long. You get a great price, a beautiful haircut. You even get a great ambiance. And I'll tell you what, Andrew, if you ever listen to him on our show, you know he loves to talk. Andrew's Master Barbershop. Also, please visit our website so you will know who is coming up in our next program for guests and all that good stuff. OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. You can hear past shows. All of our shows are podcast. Big Ed has them all sitting there waiting for you, so you can listen at your leisure. OurFreedomWorks.com.
It was mayhem at Andrew's on Saturday.
Oh, it was?
I went in for a haircut. Well, his daughter Candy's out of town.
Yes, she is.
And he's a little backed up. Yeah, the red light was on.
The red light. There is indeed a stoplight, so that when you go to Andrew's Master Barbershop, it saves you jumping out of your car if you want to get a quick haircut. He has a stoplight. If it's red, don't come in right now.
Yeah, I had like three people in front of me, so I just walked in. I saw the red light, walked in, I shut the red light off.
You did, okay. And then yellow means, I guess, you have a little bit of a wait. Green means come on through, come on in, you'll sit in right
there. You don't even have to sit down.
Right. But doesn't he give great haircuts there?
Yes.
Yeah, he's terrific. So we got a lot going on right now. You know, for weeks, there has been speculation that the long-awaited review of the surveillance abuses by the Department of Justice and the FBI during the Russia probe, you know, all of that stuff that goes on and what's going on, could finally drop at any day. But we still don't have it. Where is it, right? For more than a year and a half, Inspector General Michael Horowitz has been investigating alleged misconduct related to the FISA warrants. That were those were the documents submitted to a FISA court, a surveillance court, to allow Department of Justice officials to tap phones and surveil people because they had supposedly just cause, but you couldn't surveil Americans. You could only surveil non-Americans. Anyway, it gets very complicated. So they go to the FISA court, and they wanted to surveil Carter Page because he was doing some overseas work. But it is unclear if Carter Page, and by the way, he was an advisor to Trump, it is unclear whether or not Page was the only Trump official that they wanted to surveil. But the highly anticipated report is likely going to spark some new investigations. So where is it? Last month, Horowitz submitted a draft of his report to Attorney General Bill Barr, who was reviewing the document. So everybody thought it was coming soon. But a Justice Department official now says that the report is still in the declassification process. I guess you got to get certain names out of the public's, or, you know, not allowed to get into the public because we got a lot of, you know, spies that we got to protect, right? So where is this thing? Are we going to get it soon? Everybody's been waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm sure Trump wants it out. Trump wants it out because they're going after him, as you know, trying to get him impeached. He wants it out because it's going to show how Democrats, Hillary Clinton and the group, were using the FBI for their own probing of Donald Trump's presidential campaign and doing things, buying phony, what was that document that came out of that British, the Steele document, right? The Steele dossier. Boy, oh boy, it's really kind of scary if you want to know the truth. Let's do this, Ed. Let us take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about both Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren and how they're going to pay for their different plans.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Force.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a kind of overcast Monday morning in Tampa Bay. This is about the time of year, by the way, for you snowbirds and people that don't live here year-round, that we go into a little bit of, we would call it a little bit cooler period. I don't know if it's been that much cooler, Ed, but it feels a little bit breezier. But we had another very, very hot summer here, and we're getting a little bit of relief. I don't know.
The clouds that you're seeing right now are the beginning of a cold front that's coming through probably tonight, tomorrow, and by Wednesday, I think the high is only supposed to be 82.
Only 82.
Well, I mean, that's
coming
10
from Chicago. No, you're right.
That's 10 degrees relief, you know.
Yeah.
It's nice that it hits around Halloween because, you know, people's costumes only go out to parties and stuff.
Right.
And it's just so nasty out.
You are so right about that. We've really had some hot, hot summers. So 82 is a bit of a relief. You're right about that. Now, you know, with all these tax plans that you're hearing about from the Democrats, we've got both Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg talking about how they're going to fund their health plans. First of all, Warren has announced that she intends to release a plan to pay for her Medicare for All deal. She will release it in the coming weeks. Now, see, in the coming weeks. She can't release it now? Can she just release a one-pager that says, here's what we're going to do? No, apparently not. She said yesterday that in the upcoming weeks, she would detail how to pay for her proposal. She said at a town hall in Indianola, Iowa, what I see is that we need to talk about the cost, and I plan over the next few weeks to put out a plan that talks about specifically the cost of Medicare for All and specifically how we pay for it. Estimates place that Medicare for All deal for the first 10 years at $32 to $34 trillion. That's money that we don't have anyway, right? So I wonder what that comes down to per person. $32 to $34 trillion per person that, you know, that actually pays taxes. She said, this is something I've been working on for months and months, and it's just got a little more work until it's finished. In other words, I don't really have any damn idea how we're going to pay for this. But does it ever sound good when I'm running for president that I'm going to give you Medicare for anything you've got that you need? Any little ailment your little heart can dream up, Medicare for All is going to take care of it. There you go. Uh-huh. Well, her status is actually going up in the Democratic presidential race, apparently. I wonder if her status is going up or just others are going down. Joe Biden still seems like he's stumbling around deer in the headlights when he's up there. Bernie Sanders, he just sounds like a grumpy old man all the time. I don't know. Would you like a grumpy old man like Bernie Sanders running the at least with Donald Trump, we got a little sense of humor, right? Donald Trump is always kind of, if you think about it, when Donald Trump is talking, first of all, he's very at ease, isn't he? He's very at ease in front of a camera. And he's just, there's always something, it's like a little impish grin, wink in his eye. You know what I mean, Ed?
When you were a kid, did you ever have that old man that used to yell at people for being on their lawn, being on his lawn? When he'd run outside, he'd have a half of a bagel coming out the side of his mouth, and when he'd yell, he'd spit food. That's Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't. You watch him.
Think about it.
You need a shield when he talks because he showers people. He does.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah, I've never noticed anybody to stand too close to him when he's talking. He must be spitting a little bit. Although we're glad that he's feeling better. And he honestly looked pretty doggone good the last time I saw him on television after having a
makeup heart does wonderful
it.
Things.
It does. It does. And they all wear it. You know, speaking about makeup, this is a wonderful time. I'm glad you brought that up. We've got, think about this for a second. We've got Donald Trump orange. We've got Joe Biden white. I think we've got Elizabeth Warren kind of white. But it seems to me that Joe Biden, I guess the older you get, the more makeup you have to put on, right? But Trump's makeup, he starts to look a little bit like a dreamsicle, if anybody remembers that Good Humor bar. And Biden, he just looks more and more like he's ready to lay in a coffin.
Yeah.
He's very white looking. Extremely so.
Well, you said deer in the headlights. He looks more like the deer after it hits the headlights. He's laying on the side of the road with his feet in the air. That's Joe Biden.
Yeah. Good old Joe and Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter, you know, came out for, speaking about Hunter and deer in the headlights, that goes well. But Hunter came out and poked his head out, and he did a short interview with somebody. It was a liberal show of some sort. I can't remember which show. Explaining why he was paid all of that money. No, he wasn't really explaining why he was paid. He didn't explain why he was paid all of that money.
Did they ask the question?
They didn't directly ask him, how come you were making 60-some thousand dollars a month in the utility business in Ukraine? That would be a simple question.
Sure.
Then you would hear him go, hamana, 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 like Jackie Gleason on The Honeymooners.
Mm.
You know, he'd be stumbling around trying to explain his expertise. Or he could be honest and says, because my dad was vice president, they wanted access. That's why. That's why I was there. Are you kidding? I had just come out of a stupor, and they hired me. I was very, 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 very happy to be paid that kind of money. So now Buttigieg also has a health care plan, and he's gone after Elizabeth Warren for not telling everybody that her plan will be forcing huge tax increases on the middle class. Buttigieg says he would pay for his plan by rolling back Trump's corporate tax cut. And he would raise the corporate rate to 35%, allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. His Medicare for All Who Want It plan, because he's going to allow people to continue to take a private health care program, like at work or if they've got one they like already, would extend federal health care benefits for seniors as an option for Americans who prefer it. So it's taking Medicare, which right now is for people over the age of 66, and giving it to everybody, giving it to anybody who wants it, while also letting people opt for private plans. It's sort of like Joe Biden doing the same thing. This plan comes days after he ripped into Elizabeth Warren for being evasive about how she was going to pay for her plan. Buttigieg says he would repeal the corporate tax cut in the tax law that was enacted by the Republicans 2 years ago under Trump, which lowered the corporate rate from
35% to 21%. Well, he's going to raise it back up. So that's how he would do it. And he said the vast majority of that can be recovered, you know, the cost of the $1.4 trillion, by rolling back this corporate tax rate, the vast majority. The rest, I guess, he means, will have to be picked up by the taxpayers. So, you know, they're going back and forth. Of course, the real solution to health care, in my opinion, is no government management, free market management. I wouldn't even have the government paying for the Medicare plans because they don't do a good job of that as well. People are used to it, and I'm sure we're not going to get rid of Medicare for seniors. But if you think about it, we would have come up with a much better plan if we had allowed all the states to come up with plans for their people. And most of the states that had any sense would then say, we're going to allow free market companies, insurance companies and the like, to come here and offer it to our people. There isn't anything the government runs that can't be done better and more efficiently in the private sector. Now, you can even argue that it's unconstitutional if you look at the Constitution. It never says anything about, oh, by the way, we want the federal government to run your health care.
I was wondering, who's paying for impeachment?
Who's paying for it?
Yeah. See, because if this thing doesn't go through and goes their way, who gets the check?
The check,
the mean, check to pay for.
Well,
it.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Democrats are getting money from their constituents because they are sending out mailers saying, "Look, we got to impeach President Trump, and we need your help. Donate now."
Amazing.
Now
how
they're sending the money to the campaigns. Now these guys are keeping it for themselves.
It's amazing how they can find $2.4 billion for that, and they can't find money for other things.
Oh, I know. Oh, are you kidding? You know how. First of all, it's all, you know, we can't, what are we, $22, $23 trillion in debt. It is such a joke to talk about increasing spending on anything since we're not even able to pay. I mean, we've been borrowing and borrowing. But we're now at the point of paying just the interest on the debt. It's getting to be almost our biggest expense. It's going to be getting up there past the military. The interest on the debt. Mm-hmm. And the military is like our biggest, you know, well, between that and the total welfare programs that we have, the interest on the debt is becoming just unbelievable. $24 trillion, $22 trillion. So, anyway, it's a mess. And if we could return health care to the private sector, allow the states, if they want to run health care, let them go at it. They would still give you a better deal than having the federal government do it. Anyway, we are going to talk about another issue that maybe the government should not get involved in, the Green New Deal. We're going to do it with the head of the Competitive Enterprise Institute right after this break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Travel around the world and you'll never have to leave St. Pete at the 45th Annual International Folk Fair, October 25th through the 27th, with the Betty Fox Band performing Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Gates open Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at noon. Visit over 39 countries, watch parades, sample their food, and purchase gift items. Check out the Beer Garden on Saturday with bands performing on the main stage. Admission is just $10 for adults, $6 for students, and children under 6 are free. It's the 45th Annual International Folk Fair at the Vinoy Park in St. Pete, all presented by Spiffs.org.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Monday morning. Thank you so very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. And we're very, very happy to have the president of the Competitive Enterprise Institute join us, Kent Lastman. And Kent is very involved in a project that the Competitive Enterprise Institute has taken up regarding the Green New Deal. And most of us really, you know, we hear about it and we think, okay, it's climate change and somehow the government wants to run some sort of a program to reduce the temperature. And Kent, you know, our eyes glaze over a little bit, but would you mind, I know you've really launched into a program to let people know a little bit more about the cost and whether or not we can afford it. But the Green New Deal, it's been around for a while. In fact, didn't the Green Party back about 13 years ago start talking about that concept?
Oh, it goes back at least to the mid-aughts. It was about 2006 that the Green Party started picking this up and made it part of their platform. Later, it became a formal plank so that every member of the party would be advocating for it. But it really took off when Jill Stein, who you'll remember, has run for president at least the last two cycles.
Yeah, her name's been in the news again recently, but go ahead, yes.
That's right. She made it part of their national platform in 2012. And the Green New Deal was her idea for how to galvanize the Green Party, but also to remake the entire economy. It was a twofer, as far as she was concerned.
Yeah, and maybe the Democrats would want to bring her back so she can explain it a little bit better. So now we hear all this talk about climate change, and we can talk about whether or not how much is man-made and whether or not we'll go into a cold spell and all of that. But let's just talk about the cost here and the history a little bit more. We've got all the Democratic candidates talking a great deal about it. It is on their platform. And most of us don't know how this thing would run. I'm not sure Democrats do either. But if you could, Kent, tell us kind of what as you see it, what is the plan? Let's say the Democrats were to take control of all the houses and also the White House. How would they implement the Green New Deal?
Well, I think it's important to start with the Green New Deal is the bus. They are the dog. If they were to win control of all the apparatus of government and actually be forced to try to do something like this, to put real legislative language in front of the Congress and pass it and implement it, they would run away scared. And I say that because we know that when they put down to paper the broad outlines, the big goals, universal income, retrofitting every single building, commercial and residential in the United States, transforming the entire fleet of vehicles to electric vehicles, when they put down the big goals and then it went to a vote, it attracted no Democratic votes in the Senate. Notwithstanding, it has 12 co-sponsors who are Democrats who are also running for president. So this would be disaster for them if they actually had to try to do it. But of course they don't. This is a utopian pie-in-the-sky sort of plan. It's a very radical plan, which I think makes it dangerous, because if different pieces of it were peeled off and tried to be pushed forward on their own, each one could have very bad effects. But as a unified agenda, it's just not realistic.
You know, we all want to see the climate be stable, I guess you could say. We don't want to. I think the Green New Deal kind of plays upon our worst fears, doesn't it, about temperatures rising to the point that glaciers are melting and rivers and oceans are overflowing. And here in Florida, you know, we're at sea level to begin with, so we don't need no stinking overflowing of the oceans, right?
Right.
But you even mentioned, I mean, we could go the other way with temperatures. They could start going the other way. And all of a sudden, I don't know, I would think the Green New Dealers would still continue to talk about climate change. But you even mentioned in your report and your analysis that people that are pushing this thing are relying on technologies that have not yet even been invented. So, I mean, no, everybody is kind of groping around in the dark about this thing.
There's two big question marks. One is, how would you do these things? For example, how would you put a fleet of trucks on the road to move goods around this country? All the things that stock our grocery stores and every single Walmart and, moving the goods around that we see when we see trucks on the road that move supplies that we find in the store, that move things from a raw good toward the place where they are put together into a finished good that we then later transport to the store where we buy them. There's no way to put a fleet of trucks on the road today that would be electric or carbon neutral. The technology simply
right.
doesn't exist.
Right.
In fact, the technology doesn't exist to even implement the standards that the EPA is calling for fuel efficiency for the current fleet of trucks. So that's one big gaping hole. The technologies don't exist. Mayor de Blasio up in New York a few months ago called for no new skyscrapers to include steel and concrete. Well, that means no new skyscrapers.
Yeah, how
right?
are they
There's no
keep
technology for building that way.
This is amazing. We're talking, by the way, again, with the president of the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute, Kent Lastman, who's graciously consented to come on and talk a little bit about this this study that CEI is involved in. In fact, you launched an advertising campaign asking American people if they can afford this thing called the Green New Deal. And you mentioned a little bit of what you had to say in your campaign. At a time when technology and innovation have led the U.S. to become the world's largest producer of oil and gas and lowered energy prices, alarmist politicians and activists are using doomsday predictions to advance harmful energy rationing policies that will cost Americans tens of thousands of dollars. Have you been able, Kent, to put a price tag on what it might cost if they were even able to implement this kind of thing?
Well, we took a look at not the entire Green New Deal, but only the elements where we were confident data would be available. So that is to say, the two likely elements, the two elements that are likely the most expensive, we didn't even do an estimate for. But four areas we looked at, that's electricity, shipping and logistics, putting new fleet of vehicles on the roads, and building retrofits. All of those things we have and can collect information about through government databases, through private analysis. We looked at an estimate of what it would cost to achieve the Green New Deal goals for those four sectors. And in a place, for example, like Florida, in the first year alone, each household, it would cost more than $73,000.
Oh, my goodness.
We looked out 5 years, and the costs for years 2 through 5 would be more than $45,000 for every household in Florida. And then going on into the future, really, it doesn't end. You know, it's a perpetual new regulatory drag on the economy. The price point comes down, but it's still pretty significant, right? We're talking $37,000, almost $38,000 per household in Florida for time immemorial after the first 5 years. So you're looking at a $250,000 bite in the first 5 years per household. And we did that. We looked across five different states just to make sure that we weren't, you know, accidentally picking a high-cost state. And the numbers were remarkably consistent. They were a good deal higher for Alaska, but four other states across the continental United States, more than $70,000 for that first year to implement only four areas of the Green New Deal. I think that folks that are proposing this, they're not only relying on imaginary technologies and imaginary manufacturing processes, but they're also relying on voters to remain ignorant, right? So they're playing to fears, emotive arguments about the earth is melting. And then they say, we don't want you to look too closely at this, because if you do, we know it doesn't hold up. So they're counting on people to stay ignorant.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a scare tactic, I would think. Again, I mean, here in Florida, we are concerned about the ocean rising. Now, I don't know how they can even monitor whether or not the ocean is really rising. I mean it. I don't know how they can do it. Maybe it's rising in some places. It's like in a bathtub, you know. If the water is lapping around in the bathtub, at one point it's going to be higher on one side than on the other. So maybe it's rising here. It's lower over in Australia or something. I don't know. You know, it's just, and I know I don't know enough about it, but let me ask you this. Do you think, Kent, that Americans are buying into this really? I mean, overall, other than being a little bit scared about things like, glaciers melting and what's happening to the polar bears, and then there's always the arguments back and forth and all of that, too. But do you think Americans truly are going, yeah, this is something that's high on my list?
Well, it's a curious thing. You might say people are not of one mind. Time and again, we've looked at different ways of measuring this, polling being one of them, but also monitoring what people actually do, their behaviors, not just what they say they would do. People do not rank this very high. In fact, it typically comes in the neighborhood of 17, 18, 19 on a list of 20 areas of concern. And areas of concern where people are asked specifically, do you want the government to do something about this? And that holds true across demographics, across political persuasion. It's not a big priority. It is also the case that people believe, overwhelmingly believe, 2-1, that things are getting worse. Our temperatures, our air quality, our water quality, etc. Now, the funny thing is, in America, the air quality has never been cleaner in my lifetime. Water in America has never been better. Not just the water that we drink and we use for our households and for our businesses, but also the water in lakes, the river quality. The health of our waters in America is better today than any time in my lifetime.
You know, that's good news, although you wouldn't know it.
You would not know it, and people don't, right? So that's my point. People believe that things are getting worse, and that's a product of year over year, decade over decade of this crisis mentality, this alarmism. You know, this idea that the planet is cooling, then the planet is warming, then the climate is changing. All of that may be true, by the way. That's what planets do. They're not static.
Yeah, I think everybody would agree with that. Sure, it's going to change. Everything is changing.
The key feature for understanding this is not how much something is warming or cooling, or how much carbon dioxide is being released, which can be important, right? They can be important features for understanding a policy response. The key thing to think through, particularly for lawmakers that want to put in place policies that reach beyond our own generation, our own lifetime, is to think about adaptability. are we doing things that allow for the innovation, the adaptability of society? And I am here to tell you that if you put in place a comprehensive reshaping of our economy to the tune of $70,000 per household, you are clamping down and stopping the ability of people to adapt.
Indeed. Go ahead.
I was just saying, it limits mobility, where people choose to live, what they build things with. It limits our ability to buy the essentials of life, the basics, groceries and things to get us around. It is not a recipe for a healthy society.
Well, thank goodness your institute is involved in getting out the word on the cost and what is really going on with this whole concept. Thank you so much for coming on, Kent.
I appreciate what you're doing, and just a quick shout-out to all my friends involved with FreedomWorks. Let folks know that it was long ago, more than a decade, certainly. I won't tell you how many years, but I worked at FreedomWorks many years ago, and I love what you're doing, and I just encourage you all to stay involved and keep listening.
Thank you, Kent. I appreciate coming from you. Quite a compliment. Thank you so much.
Take care now.
All right. There he is, Kent Lastman, president of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. All right. We are going to take our break. We got some more things to talk about. Canada is voting on the prime minister. Is Trudeau going to be reelected? We will talk about it.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tan Talk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, Bowling Stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you very, very much for being with us. Canadians, of which I used to be one when I was a little boy because I was born there, but Canadians voting for the new prime minister, general election today. Do you think Justin Trudeau, is going to retain his job? Well, polling predicts a minority government. In other words, no party up there is going to get enough votes to have 50% or more. So they're going to have to form, a coalition. The Liberals and the Conservatives, by the way, the Conservatives are led by a guy by the name of Andrew Scheer. He would become prime minister if the Conservatives were to get into power. But it says here, the polling shows it could be set for a near-dead heat. Pundits calling it one of the nation's closest elections ever. Maybe Justin is going to have to put his brown face back on and go out into the crowds to attract additional votes. Did you know that he's in trouble for that? He is. They got this picture of him a few years ago. Poor guy. I mean, come on. He was at some sort of an event. And, of course, Andrew Scheer came out in front of the cameras, the conservative guy on the Conservative Party. See how shocked he was to see that. No, you weren't, Andrew. You were gleeful. Absolutely gleeful, because it gave you a shot at becoming the prime minister. And by the way, we've got our good buddy from New York State who has called in, and I bet he's got a lot to say. It's Angelo Ceresi. And Angelo, thank you for calling. Do you, I've got to ask you right out front.
Sure, go ahead.
Did you hear about this Tulsi Gabbard, Hillary Clinton brouhaha?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any thoughts about, Tulsi is claiming that Hillary is suggesting that she's probably some sort of a Russian agent over here, even though she was, for quite a few years, she was serving in the military for us.
Yes. I guess Hillary's been smoking a little too much weed or something. I don't know.
Hillary was talking on some podcast. It wasn't like it was, you know, in front of a nationwide audience or anything, but still, she goes off on this thing about Tulsi Gabbard. It turns out, you know, Tulsi Gabbard had backed Bernie Sanders the last time, and I think it never got out of Hillary's craw that Tulsi Gabbard never supported her.
Yeah, I think she's a little upset about that.
She's got a long memory, and she waits for her opportunity. That's what I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton. I don't think she ever forgets.
No, she hasn't, and she's still chomping at the bit. I think she wants to get into that race, too.
Yeah. So tell me, Angelo, I mean, there's still a lot going on, and now Donald Trump, along with trying to stave off impeachment, is trying to stave off. What did you think about his decision initially to hold the G7 summit at one of his hotels? I thought, come on, Donald. Even if you didn't make a penny on it, it looks so bad. What did you think?
It does look bad, right.
Yeah. I mean, did you feel he should never have even given it a moment's thought?
Well, in today's climate, he probably shouldn't have, yeah. You know. But, you know, if he's not going to make a penny on it, then...
Well, he claimed he wouldn't. But, I mean, you know, then they used an argument. Well, yeah, but think about all of the people that are busboys and waitresses and all of the other people that would make some money that need the job money, you know, at the resort. But I thought that was kind of a weak argument. But now he's backed off of it. He said, no, okay, everybody's so upset, the Democrats are so upset with this, then we'll, you know, we'll forget the whole thing.
I know. I was surprised that he came out with that, too, you know, considering all the stuff he's been saying about Joe Biden and all that, you know.
Right. So any last thoughts, Angelo, on what's going on right now with Trump? Do you have any thoughts about either the impeachment process or what he's doing overseas?
Well, you know, pulling back the troops from Syria and everything like that, I'm for it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you were...
A lot of these guys that were complaining, you know, I've always had the saying, the ones who are the most vocal are the least productive.
Yeah, you were in the military, so you look at it also from the perspective, I guess.
Right, I didn't like folks being shot at me when I was in Vietnam. I wanted to hurry up and come home, and I'm sure those guys would feel the same way.
Right, even the ones that you think that are protecting some of the Kurds over there in that portion of Syria?
You know, I can understand how the troops would feel, because you fight beside them, and you almost like you're like brothers, you know, in arms. And to pull back and leave them hanging, it's not a good idea, I guess. There's never really a good time to pull out. But, you know, there has to come a time when we have to come back home. I mean, it's really not fun being shot at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, I can understand where our troops are coming from because you fight side by side with them.
My only thought, I want to quickly ask you this. We're pulling troops out of the Syrian region, but then didn't Donald Trump say he's going to send about 1,000 of them over to Saudi Arabia to help them? I mean, if we want to pull out of the Middle
East... Not all together.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's where it seems to me that Donald Trump still hasn't got, or for whatever reason, hasn't got a consistent pull-out plan. Do you sense that?
I guess, you know, he's torn, you know, between what he has to do and what he can do. You know what I'm saying? Or where he has to be at that particular time. The Saudis, you know, are probably asking for help, too. Maybe they're afraid of something.
They're going to pay for their service. So in that instance, I can kind of say, all right, you know, they're going to send us money. They can, gosh knows they can afford it, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but what if shooting starts, you know? Now our troops are in harm's way.
Right. So you're kind of reluctant to even send them over there, right?
Right now, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say enough is enough. We have spent enough American blood all over the world. It's time to stop it. You know, since I've been out of the service and since I, you know, came home and everything like that, and you see what happens, you know, I mean, for what? What are our guys dying for? We're not accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
Really? We have no victories anywhere. Vietnam, there was no victory.
No, there sure wasn't.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. When in 1975?
Yeah.
When President Ford pulled the troops out of
that's right.
Vietnam, I was so bitter and so mad and so disgusted. Man, for days and weeks, I felt so bad. Gut-wrenching in my stomach, you know?
Yeah, well, we accomplished nothing but kill off about 59,000 of our guys.
Right, and I lost a lot of good friends over there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and you know, and then you start thinking as time goes on, you get older, what are we accomplishing? It's not like World War II where we were attacked. I mean, we were attacked in 9/11. Yes, we were attacked.
Yeah.
The war started.
Right.
But you can't keep fighting for 20 years.
Yeah. Angelo, my friend, I got to run, but I want to thank you so very much for calling in, as always, and I want to hear from you again next week.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. Angelo.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir. You too, Angelo. Angelo Ceresi. All right. It is time. Ed is going, come on, I got to get on the drums here. Let's do our top 10. He's right. And Ed, if you're over there, we have the top 10 oldest surviving Academy Award nominees. I want to find out if you will know number one. Okay, here we go. Oldest surviving Oscar nominees. Number 10. William Friedkin. He did The Exorcist. And he won for Best Director. All right. I think he's 84 years old. I forgot to put his age on. Number 9. George Chakiris. I don't know if Ed remembers George. George Chakiris. He danced in West Side Story, and he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, I missed that one.
Okay. He's 85 years old. Number 8. You'll know this one. He won for Best Director. Clint Eastwood is the oldest.
Old Clint.
89 years old.
Yep.
Can you believe it? Number 7. Guy by the name of Don Murray. He won the Best Supporting Actor, and he is now 90 years old. Number 6, Sidney Poitier.
Mm.
Would you believe Sidney is 92 years old? He won Best Actor for Lilies of the Field. He's 92, still around. Number 5, Norman Jewison. Norman Jewison is 93. He won, he was nominated for Best Director for Fiddler on the Roof. Number 4, Hal Holbrook. 94 years old, nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Number 3.
Oh, hang on.
Okay. Eva Marie Saint. You remember her at all, Ed?
Nope.
You don't? She's 95 years old. She won for Best Supporting Actress many years ago in the 50s. Number 2. Kirk Douglas.
Wow.
He won for Best Actor. He's 102 years old, Ed. And finally, the number one. Do you have any idea? The oldest.
I have no
oldest
idea.
It's an actress.
Nope.
Gone with the Wind. Olivia de Havilland. She's 103.
No.
And she won for Best Actress. So there you go, my friend. All right. Time's running out. Remember, freedom works. We'll be back on Wednesday. Bye for now.